Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are very happy to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Tennessee Titans great former linebacker Keith Bullock. Keith, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Doing great, man. Just getting ready to go to work. Just on this rainy Wednesday.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a rainy Wednesday. Hopefully the weather clears up as we go throughout the day here. So, Keith, obviously did not go well for the Titans on Sunday against Arizona. They got thrashed in that game. Just going back to your playing days, what is the week of practice like as a player after you get your butt whooped on Sunday? What do you remember those times being like and trying to recover from that throughout the next week?
Well, you know, after the game, you know, it soaks in, and then you usually watch it on Monday, and you realize it, as bad as it was, it really wasn't as bad as you thought it was. Everything can be corrected. So you just go back to the drawing board. You go back to work. You know, go back to work. You work on the things that need to be corrected. You work on the things that your opponent is going to try to continue to expose. You really just, you know, put some glaring holes on your personal game or on the team as a whole. And that week, really, it's a lot of work to do those corrections so you don't go into the next game having the same results.
So what was your takeaway from this one, Keith? Because this is definitely one of those games that looked bad in the moment for the Titans. What did you think of the performance, and what are the, I guess, the fixes that you would be making right now in that building?
Well, first and foremost, I said the whole preseason, you know, I was just listening to sports talk radio, listening to everybody, listening to Tannehill saying he's watching film on Julio, listening to the guys, the players saying they're ready to go. But I'm from the era where you got to play in the preseason. You know, you got to get some full speed game time reps. I don't care if it's 10, 20, or 30, but you need some. So what I saw on Sunday was a team in the Titans that definitely wasn't prepared to play, wasn't prepared as they thought they were going to be, whereas Arizona came out hungry and ready. You could see in that first few series the defensive line penetrating the line of the Tennessee Titans. You see red jerseys and pushing white jerseys back on both sides of the ball, and, you know, obviously Arizona came to play. So for me, what I saw was a team that was underprepared, wasn't ready to play, but the good thing about it was only week one, and with a shortened preseason, this one game in December, this one loss in September isn't going to matter in December. So I think, you know, this is a great week, tough week going up to Seattle, but a great week to kind of change and turn things around.
So, Keith, obviously part of the disappointment with Titans fans is the hype and the expectations that this team had coming into the season, and you're no stranger to that. You played on some teams here in Tennessee that had very high expectations heading into the season. How do you go about managing those expectations both individually and as a group? How did you manage those expectations personally back in your playing days?
Well, I mean, I feel for me the closest thing that I can remember us having a lot of hype is after that 13-3 season, I think, in 08, and then 09 starting off 0-6. That was really tough to manage. But at the end of the day, for me, I put pressure on my teammates. I put pressure on myself. I probably put pressure on everyone in that building to come in and do their job day in and day out, because the only thing that makes you feel better after a loss is a win. And after having six of them in a row, and the last one being, I think it was like 50-something-0, I still don't know how you put a team out there and they lose and give up 50 points. But that happened, and I was a part of that. And we just had to refocus, man. We had to stay together as a team. We can't listen to the outside noise. You really don't hear what the media is saying unless you're reading the league clips or, you know, and if you're into that thing. And I'm sure today's game is tough because with social media, but the team just has to stay together. And after one bad loss, I think this team is all right. I think if they get to October and haven't won a game yet, you might want to start scratching your head.
Yeah, you guys could just like not pick up the paper, right, or not turn on the TV or radio now. It's on everybody's phone, right? At all times.
It's popping up. You probably get alerts to tell you how trash you are.
Right. So, speaking of media and outside noise and all that stuff, I mean, there has been some reaction, Keith. You know, Mike Vrabel, I don't know if you saw the comment, but he was asked about Julio Jones' personal foul, and he said that falls under the category of dumb bleep that hurts the team, which, you know, Vrabel rarely kind of, I guess, goes there individually. But what did you think of that? And I guess, I don't know if you've paid much attention to the reaction, but it's been all over the map. How would you take that? And if you were on this team right now, what would you think about a comment like that from Vrabel?
I mean, if I were on the team, I know how my coach is. But if I'm someone like Julio Jones, the superstar, and, you know, you can go back through his track record, I bet you don't see him do anything like that. To me, it looked like one of those things they were just pushing after the play, and obviously he gets caught. I would definitely have a conversation with the coach, if I were the player, just because I want to see if we are on the same page. You know, sometimes coaches do things to get reaction out of players. He does things to get reaction from his team, you know, a jump start. I just find it, you know, a little odd that he would choose Julio's personal foul out of all the things to point out where there was a ton of glaring things. But maybe that's his way to, you know, jumpstart his future Hall of Fame wide receiver. Who knows? But he wasn't the only one that, you know, did stupid bleep out there on Sunday.
Former Titans linebacker Keith Bullock on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Keith, obviously a guy like Rashawn Evans, who has not gotten the final year of his option picked up here with the Titans, he's playing on the final year of his deal. Lots of talent, a first-round pick at the linebacker position, but it's not gone, I think, particularly to plan at this point for him with the Titans. When you watch Rashawn Evans play, what do you see, and what's your advice for Rashawn Evans as he enters what is a critical, critical season for him and his future in the NFL?
When I watch Rashawn Evans, I see a lot of the things that you said. You know, speed has all the talents. We saw and knew what type of player he was coming out of Alabama. He's actually being asked to do 13 different things at the pro level than he actually did at Alabama. So he's still adjusting to that. And honestly, to be quite frank, when I see a player in their third, fourth year, first round player with all this talent, I can't help but to not look into the classroom. How is he being coached? How is his linebacker coach communicating, you know, the defense to him? What are his actual assignments? For me, it goes a little bit deeper than just surface level, because I know I had Dave McGinnis in my classroom. I had, you know, coaches that actually told me how they broke the game down from a coaching standpoint and made it easier for me to go out there and play. Now, that could just be me as a player, but sometimes sitting on the couch being armchair quarterback, when I see players playing a certain way consistently, I can't think but what are the corrections they're getting and what is his game time assignment.
So as you look at this defense as a whole, Keith, it didn't go well Sunday really for any aspect of the team. But I also thought Kyler Murray did some things that I don't know how many people can do. Well, yeah. So, what's your overall takeaway just from that side of the ball? Did you find areas of hope moving forward? Do you put it more on Kyler and Hopkins and those guys just being, you know, ridiculous playmakers? What's your analysis just on that side?
I think you know, Arizona came out wanting to put the league on alert. You know that they have one of the best young quarterbacks, one of the best wide receivers. They have a stout defense. I think that was about Arizona just coming out against a playoff team, AFC playoff team like Tennessee, who's supposed to be tough, hard-nosed football team, and just showing and giving them a message. And for Tennessee, I think against any other quarterback, defense plays way better. There was a lot of things you just cannot account for that Kyler Murray did the other day. It's just tough playing against an unscheduled quarterback that can deliver the ball and has the IQ of polished pocket passer. So I think that obviously with Russell Wilson, he's not as elusive, but he can create time, and he's always looking to get the ball downfield before running. It's another challenge, but I think that this is a great challenge for this defense after playing a team like Arizona with similar talent on their offense. So DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett and gang, they're coming ready to play, and I think the Tennessee Titans will be too after last week.
Well, Keith, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your perspective and really appreciate you making time this morning to join us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it anytime.
Absolutely. Thanks, former Keith. Titans linebacker Keith Bullock, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll take your reaction to what Keith Bullock had to say there on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick the Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Saturday, you win a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Friday morning at 9:45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Now with two locations in Murfreesboro, visit our brand-new Murfreesboro location at 2019 Memorial Boulevard, member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Thanks to Keith Bullock for joining us in the last segment. I thought pretty good analysis there by Keith Bullock, and a guy that certainly defensively knows what he's talking about. Mr. Monday Night here on the program.
Yeah, and interesting stuff on, as a player from his perspective, you see someone who, you know, isn't quite utilizing all of the talent, and you wonder about the coaching. You mentioned, you know, Dave McGinnis was in there with him and explaining, like, not just here's what you should do, but here is the full breakdown of, like, how we look at it as coaches. And I think that's a, you know, it's a great point, like, on how you help player understanding. I mean, I would personally also look at Rashawn Evans and, again, say some players have tons of ability but maybe not great instincts.
Yep.
And some players maybe don't have great ability but do have great instincts. And I would say, like, Jayon Brown is an example of the latter. And Rashawn Evans, a little bit of the former.
Yep.
Like, Rashawn Evans is a much more talented athlete, gifted athlete than Jayon Brown. Jayon Brown makes more plays.
Yep. How do you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, they're both coached by the same people.
Right.
You know, but I thought that was a really insightful comment still by Keith.
Kevin in Nashville texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. For what it's worth, when Jared said he felt good about the Titans and wasn't worried about the Cardinals, I hammered the Cardinals +3.
Did he say that? Oh, man.
He also called UCLA over LSU, though. So
he did.
Hey, we don't speak well of Jared on this show. Come on now. Do we have something nice to say about Jared?
He's going to help with the
probably
betting
not.
Picks.
Probably not. There you go. Just kidding, Jared. I guess I'm arguing. Am I arguing with Jared today? Is it Wednesday? I guess I'm. Oh, I may not be able to do it on Zoom, though. Tennis. There's a middle school tennis match every day.
You got to do it on phone.
Can I do it on phone Zoom? Would that be worthwhile?
I don't know.
Put the video on,
figure that out.
My car.
You'll be vertical though.
You got to have the high angle.
Jared's going to win the argument today.
You got to have the high angle. Take away the double chin. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's fine. I mean, in fact, I would say preemptively, Caroline, just give him the win. We don't want him crying. He cries too much as it is. Just give him the W. I have no problem with it.
Check that out at 5 o'clock today on Stillman and Company. Nate on the text line. We haven't thought Vrabel ripping Julio was a big deal, but it seems like Keith Bullock thinks it is. Is it a bigger deal because he's a star and not a regular Joe football player? We really didn't say much when Vrabel called out other players for doing dumb stuff because we knew that's what he sometimes does, and those players aren't as much of a star as Julio Jones.
Short answer on that is yes. Of course, it's the person involved. Now, again, I'll argue, in the media, there's very little of this with Vrabel, but I would also say that if he had said that exact same thing the other day about, you know, Nate Davis, then the first take probably isn't, you know, having a big deal.
No.
Listen, again, I'll go to my shop, The Athletic. That quote happened. I tweeted it out. I got a Slack from an editor about how they're doing a headline on it, and they did. And I wrote some analysis on, like, what it means. So, I mean, there was a lot of instant reaction around the league of, whoa. Interesting. I mean, Heidi from Dixon on our text line says, so if there is a beef that continues, who would be out the door first, Mike or Julio? Is this Jared pretending to be Heidi? We're already taking it to who's going to get fired because of Julio, because Julio's already not working. He was terrible Sunday. He's going to be a disaster. Jared said they shouldn't have traded for him. Jared's going to be right. Everybody's going to get fired. Who's the beef? I mean, we don't know that there's beef, okay? I mean, this is one comment in the media. Now, if you wanted to say who would be out the door first, if you want to take that hypothetical, typically the answer is the coach is out before the player. Although in the NFL, they are committed to Julio here for a period of time. But I don't know. I think there's a little bit of overdoing it here at this point. Sorry, Heidi.
Can't wait for Julio.
We love you, though.
Julio to catch six balls on Sunday for like $1.15. Like, okay. Looks like things are going to be okay.
Or
maybe not.
2 for 17, and he and Vrabel are screaming at each other on the sideline.
Maybe so. Caleb on the text line. He wasn't much of a star on Sunday, so say what needs to be said. I mean, I get that. Who was? Who was a star for the Titans on Sunday?
Right. Like, again, to take it to the analysis I heard from Jared, like, he was terrible Sunday. I didn't see him being terrible. I saw very few opportunities. I saw him have one drop that you have to have. I saw a couple passes from Tannehill that looked like a quarterback and receiver who aren't on the same page. I saw Tannehill force one to him that turned into a pick. I thought he ran well. But I mean, again, like you said earlier on the show, Robbie, then Derrick Henry was terrible too. Terrible, Derrick. You were awful. I mean, we all saw him get the ball and at least one defender unblocked tackling him right after he had the ball for the most part, right?
Yes.
But he was terrible. So Julio was terrible too. I mean, it is a little bit of piling on here with the Julio thing. While keeping in mind, yeah, there's some stuff out of Atlanta that obviously didn't go well later. Does that mean that's – I mean, we'll see. We're going to find out if that's who he is or if that was that situation.
Well,
but with teammates and stuff, it's been a pretty consistent message from people about Julio in a locker room.
Well, and because of that, I've seen some reaction. You know, Julio took himself out of the game. I think it was 3rd and 3 the other day, and Julio took himself out of the game. And people are like, well, there he goes. He's taking himself out of the game. Doesn't want to be on the field. And I remember watching that at the time saying, yeah, he's not in shape. Like, he's not like A.J. Brown took,
A.J. Brown did
took him out of the game the next play.
Right.
So that's when you get worried about just get on the field and get in game conditioning. I mean, I think that's a concern to a certain degree with everyone in week 1 because you've not played a ton in the preseason or at all in the preseason. It's hot. I think you see that a lot throughout the league in week 1 of the conditioning is not really where you need it to be and where you want it to be. So I didn't come away from Julio Jones taking himself out of the game on 3rd and 3 and really thinking to myself, oh, there's those Atlanta issues coming back to the fold. I think he was just tired, and you got to get better conditioning.
Right. I mean, look at all the cramping too. I mean, Lawan missed 2 series with cramps. I mean, I guess you could look at that and say Taylor Lawan didn't want any more Chandler Jones, and he tapped out, you know. I mean, look to me like he was in the injury tent and he was on the bike. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it's – look, if you lose and you lose like that, then the worst case gets taken to any situation pretty easily. But we'll see. And with Julio, look, he's got to perform, and practice is important.
Well, and the expectation for him is high.
Today will be interesting.
The expectation for him is high, and it should be. I mean, this goes back to what I said before the season. I expect Julio Jones to have a big season for the Titans because that's what they brought him in here to do. Like, you're not making the trade for Julio Jones if you don't still believe Julio Jones could come in here and be a big difference maker for your team. So I'm not moving the goalposts this year on Julio Jones. My expectations is that he comes in and he is a big factor for this team offensively. Does it have to be week 1 where that's the case? No, and it wasn't. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But my expectations for Julio Jones right now are the exact same as they were before the season started, and that is to come in and be a huge difference maker for this team, and we'll see whether or not he can live up to that.
Right, and I agree. And over a period of time, if what his production was Sunday is like the average production he's having, then at some point it's like, okay, well, he's not performing. There's a disconnect. It was a bad move. Whatever. But on Sunday, with the one thing we saw, what I saw was a team that couldn't block the other team and a lot of things. And I think you can trace that to the Todd Downing criticism too. I didn't think it was a good day for Todd Downing. But, man, you have to block people in front of you. I mean, the Taylor Lewan clip of Buda Baker one-handed dropping him on his butt.
Yeah.
is the one that is getting a lot of circulation, but I watched that game over again. Let me tell you something. There are a lot of just simple, like, if you can't block him, this play's blown up.
Yeah.
And it happened a lot.
Vincent and Dixon texting in. Pump the brakes. It's one game. Is Julio going to catch 15 balls per game? Probably not. And said it in the Mike Vrabel way via text line.
Probably not.
Nicely done, Vincent.
Well done. Well done.
Matt from Camden texting in. Everybody sucked on Sunday, not just any one player, period. I think that's probably the best way to sum it up.
I mean, offense
wasn't great Sunday.
So we did, what, like three positives, which was hard, or three best players, which is hard.
It was hard to find.
I did actually put A.J. Brown out there.
Yeah.
Because I thought when he had opportunities, he looked like A.J. Brown. But even that was limited.
Yeah.
So limited by blocking, I think somewhat limited by plan. I think the plan's got to be better.
It's been an interesting week to see the reaction to, I think, one of the most popular players in the franchise. I've even maybe called him at one point in time the face of the
you
franchise
may have.
Back in the day. We'll get to more of that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'm on Julio listening to the guys, the players saying they're ready to go, but I'm from the era where you got to play in the preseason. You know, you got to get some full speed game time reps. I don't care if it's 10, 20, or 30, but you need some. So what I saw on Sunday was a team in the Titans that definitely wasn't prepared.
That was former Titans linebacker Keith Bullock on with us earlier this hour, talking Titans and the importance of building some familiarity, getting some snaps in the preseason. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Interesting comments there from Keith Bullock. And, you know, that relates to the Julio discussion that we've had, which, by the way, Robert in Nashville, I have to get to this text very quickly, on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We may have figured out the struggles for the Titans over the weekend. Robert in Nashville texting in saying, boy, did we miss Corey Davis's blocking?
I'm just saying. I bet you he threw
some. That could be it.
I bet you he threw some nice blocks Sunday for the Jets, in addition to scoring their only two touchdowns.
Yes.
Does it all, man.
Well, that's why he's a top 100 NFL player.
Hey, blocking matters at all positions, just like tackling matters at all defensive positions.
It does.
I want a QB who
I'm
feels
sure
a
Corey
nice
Davis'
block.
Blocking led to the 17 carries for 45 yards on the ground for the Jets.
Well, imagine if he wasn't there. It would have been like 17 for 17.
That's true.
No, but in all seriousness, good call. That Rob?
Robert in Nashville.
Robert,
yeah.
Robert, well done.
That was good stuff.
A lot of running jokes that we continue to keep alive.
That's correct. Joe, it's been a very interesting week on social media in terms of the reaction to Taylor Lewan and his struggles on Sunday. I mean, there's no way to get around it. Taylor Lewan was bad Sunday, and he was getting beat repeatedly by Chandler Jones. He looked slow. He didn't look explosive. He was overwhelmed. And now, in addition to the Chandler Jones stuff, you've got the video clip yesterday circulating throughout Twitter of Buda Baker on the blitz, basically just throwing the forearm to Taylor Lewan and knocking him on his back. It was not a good game for Taylor Lewan. It maybe was the worst game of Taylor Lewan's career when you think about just how talented we know that he is. The reaction from a lot of fans has been pretty visceral, pretty mean towards Taylor Lewan. And it's interesting because I tend to view Lewan as one of the most popular players that they have. I think he's got a lot of fans. Certainly his podcast has something to do with that. But I think people, a lot of Titans fans around here, love Taylor Lewan. I understand that he played poorly. And when you have a highly paid guy playing poorly, there's going to be negative reaction when that happens. But he is coming off a torn ACL. And it's not like this is just, there's no excuse for him out there. It's been a pretty interesting reaction this week from Titans fans. Pretty harsh on Taylor Lewan after Sunday.
Well, and even in Sunday.
Yeah.
Again, I'm sure, you know, the new PA announcer. Again, I guess I've only recalled quarterback changes being announced like that.
Yes.
You're like, in now for quarterback, you know. But, like, it was like.
Number 10.
In now.
Vince Young.
Yeah, there you go. In now at, you know, back in the field or left tag or whatever. Taylor Lewan. Giving the, you know, the stadium, the people who are still in the stadium, a chance to just boo Taylor Lewan as he came back in the game, which actually was like, golly, I thought that was a little much.
Things change in a hurry.
But again, like, yeah, if he's not announced as being back in the game, I don't, you know, then that doesn't happen. But I would agree that there's been some harshness. I always feel like, one, I don't know if he's polarizing, but I think it depends on, like, if you're, like, a young dude.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a bro, you love Tara Lawan, yeah. You know? You love his podcast. You know, whatever. What are the, what is it, like, dad? Call him dad.
Maybe my least favorite thing ever.
Yeah,
some now, of look, stuff. I like Taylor Lewan, and I've dealt with Taylor Lewan a couple of times, and he's awesome. So I like me some Taylor Lewan. I have no problem with Taylor Lewan. The grown men calling him dad stuff has been just ridiculous to me.
So but I don't.
It is what it is.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's like some of the, I don't know, old codgers in the fan base are like dislike him more because of that. I don't know. But yeah, I've detected that too. Look. He's a highly paid player. He's a very vocal player. The criticism that I've already said enough on it this week, but that's just so stupid, is the criticism that because he does a podcast, somehow that takes away from – if he actually prioritized that over being a professional football player, then fine. That's one thing. I mean, I can tell you just from, like, walking around the building and you walk by the weight room sometimes to see him in there and as he's rehabbing this knee – I mean, you know, the guy gives everything he's got for the game. Also, though, Robbie, I think that the suspension a couple years ago probably soured some people on him.
I would agree.
Right? Because whether you like it or not, fair or not, that casts some doubt on him. And so, look, ultimately, I think it's probably – it's personality and contract combined. And then, you know, playing that poorly. He was bad Sunday.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, there's no question he played poorly. You know, again, though, it's not like Chandler Jones is some scrub out there. I mean, but the last time Chandler Jones was healthy for a full NFL season, he had 19 and a half sacks. So, I mean, he's done this to people before.
Which is going to look like small potatoes when this year's done.
Yes, it is. So, I mean, you know, I get it. Taylor Lewan was awful on Sunday, and I'm not trying to excuse that in any way. But it is Chandler Jones, and he is coming off an ACL. So don't you think there's a possibility that as this season continues to go along, maybe Taylor Lewan gets better, and maybe as a fan, you recognize that and say, all right, well, maybe this is going to be a process with Taylor Lewan? Like, I was just kind of blown away at how immediately people were just all over Taylor Lewan.
Yeah. No, you're right. I had a line in my column off the game. It was something like basically about giving grace to someone coming off an ACL. And, like, in the comments, like, give grace, rah! You know, people are like, okay, well, listen, I'm not saying that, you know, this was an acceptable performance or at all, and he's a highly paid left tackle. He's paid to be one of the best in the game, and he wasn't. But same thing. Don't you think that over time he'll probably find his footing and get better? If he doesn't, then they're in deep trouble.
Sure.
But I agree that it was a little bit overboard.
Well, and we've even talked about the idea of, you know, Taylor Lewan is highly paid. He's not getting any younger. He's still a really good player. But the Titans are going to have some salary cap decisions coming up that are going to be tough. And I think Taylor Lewan's contract is part of that. I think it's part of those decisions that John Robinson is going to have to weigh the pros and cons of. So, you know, I'm not saying that there's a guarantee that Taylor Lewan's going to be here much longer after this year. I think
if he plays like that, he won't be.
Well, if he plays like that, he certainly won't be. But I expect him to get better as they move ahead here. It's just been interesting to me to see the reaction all week long from him. Now, I also, to your point, we've seen Taylor Lewan struggle before. And, you know, Fred from Ashland City texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. I like the guy, but we have put up with his dumb flags, PEDs, and antics to only have him blow 2 to 3 games a year. It's so predictable now that he looks washed. Like, I don't recall
that's
couple of years the personal fouls really being all that much of a problem from Taylor Lewan. Was that a problem early in his career? Oh, yeah. It was a big problem early in his career. But that was 5 years ago now. I don't think that the last couple of years when Lewan's been on the field, the personal fouls have been a big issue with Taylor Lewan.
No. And I may be forgetting something, but I think that was a much bigger thing. 2016, right in there, he was still, you know, a young player in the league. And I also, some people have argued with me this week that he's overrated overall as a player. I disagree with that. Prior to his ACL, I think he was earning his pay. To your point on the contract, you know, the dead money this year, 15 mil. If you move on, next year it's 1.8 mil. So, yeah, look, I mean, this could be it for him. Now, luckily for the Titans, they've drafted a couple offensive tackles very high in the last couple drafts.
Yes,
so they're all ready for the transition.
It's worked out very well thus far.
That was sarcasm.
Yes. Yes, it was. It's just interesting. And the other thing is this. Like, when you think about Taylor Lewan and the personality that he brings to the table, I agree. I think some people love it. Like, some people it probably rubs the wrong way. But I think the other thing that's interesting, too, and you brought up the some people think he's overrated. To me, if you watched the Titans' offense last year, you saw how much they missed Taylor Lewan based on what they had to do in pass protection to compensate for him not being there. Now, the flip side of that argument is, okay, well, you could say that, but they still had a 2,000-yard rusher and one of the best offenses in the league. So how much did they really miss Taylor Lewan? And I get that part of it.
That's why Arthur Smith's the head coach right now.
Yeah, Arthur Smith's pretty good. But to me, it was pretty obvious how important Taylor Lewan is to this team last year once he went down.
Without question. And by the way, Bob on Twitter has brought up, you know, he's the Arthur Smith thing. You know, everybody calls him a genius. Did you see what he did in the opener? Yeah. As actually, he tagged a bunch of us, including Kaharski, who was like, yeah, he went to a bad team. I mean, like this year, folks, shouldn't be a referendum on Arthur Smith as an offensive coordinator because he has a terrible team that he inherited. That's why he got a head coaching job. Usually that means someone got fired from a bad team. He was very good here.
Scott on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If those people calling Lewan dad are calling Lewan dad, then I guess Chandler Jones is their new granddad.
Nice.
This is a tough one. We'll continue to take Grandpa, your reaction. To
Grandpa Taylor. Chandler.
Yes. We'll continue to take your reaction to the reaction of Taylor Lewan on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Get beat, and sometimes, you know, that happens. You know, and so, you know, we have to improve. Taylor has to improve. We've said this before in this league. Your best players, you know, they have to play good on Sunday for you to win. You know, that's how this game is set up. And, you know, that didn't happen for us.
That was Mike Vrabel talking about Taylor Lewan on Monday and saying the best players in this league have to play well for your teams to win. And
not really specifically,
wasn't
sorry.
Specifically about Taylor Lewan.
I was going to say, but he was asked about it. But there's a great example of what he does. He does, you know, he kind of, a lot of times, good or bad, Vrabel was asked about a player, and he'd be like, well, we all have to play better. Right. Or even good, you know, he's very hesitant to try to get into, like, let's focus on this individual. You know, a lot of coaches think that way, but some are a lot more free about talking about individuals. He's not normally one.
Right.
So there you go.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, the 3 years since Lewan got paid, a four-game suspension, an injury, gets worked by a player also coming off an injury. You can't be a personality like that and have that result. That's why people are fed up. Lawson and Herb Street are 100% correct in calling him a fake tough guy. Going back to Shaq Lawson and Kirk Herb Street's comments earlier in Lewan's career.
Yeah, the Herb Street thing happened in the 2016, and it happened in the, I think, after that Raiders game that we talked about yesterday, where he just basically launched himself onto a pile of players and killed a drive late that they were trying to either tie or win, but whatever it was. I mean, that was one of those moments where immaturity and bad penalties were part of it. Look, he's had bad penalties. I understand the suspension. I agree. I get why that's going to turn some fans on him, but I'm still going to say that other than maybe the first couple games back in 19 and until he got hurt last year, he was awfully good.
Justin from Nashville, maybe people are done with Lewan because of his antics. You have to back it up on the field with your play. Similar to Vrabel trying to act like Belichick without the skins on the wall. Are we also forgetting that Derrick Henry ran for over 2,000 without Taylor Lewan? We're not forgetting. Well, I think if you pay attention to the passing game, the protection, you basically took Jonnu Smith totally out of the passing game last year because you didn't have Taylor Lewan. I mean, that's what happened.
Right. And also, I mean, How many? I mean, I'm sure Henry had, what, 800 of it with Luan on the field or something? For sure, though, they figured it out with in the run game with Sombrilo and Quessenberry and did a good job. Again, I think that the OC deserves a lot of credit for that. The players who have stepped in deserve a lot of credit. I guess you could look at it and say, so how important is Taylor Luan? But like you just said, they had to change how they did things because of that. Taylor Luan, when he's playing Taylor Luan football, gives you a chance to say you can put him on an island against any pass rush in the league and feel pretty good about it. And that was a key going into Sunday.
Yep.
I mean, I think we said it last week. Like, one key is whoever is over there, you got to be able to just say, Taylor, that's your area, and then you devote more resources elsewhere. And it didn't work. If it continues to not work, then he won't be here long. I mean, that's very simple.
Shane from Ashland City texting in. A torn ACL recovery is no joke. It's long. It's tough. But you also don't forget how to play during that time. That man looked like Timothy Tebow out there Sunday. Sorry, not sorry. And I love Luan. But, hey, you have to give credit where credit is due. Just like if it's bad, someone has to tell you. Hey, look, I don't think anybody's arguing that Taylor Luan wasn't bad on Sunday. He was bad Sunday. Just the reaction to that in one game has been pretty extreme, I think.
This has been a great overreaction week from a crappy week one game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been strong. Very, very strong. It's not Philly, but I'm liking it. I'm liking what I'm seeing around here.
Dennis texting in. The PA announcer should start saying things like, and now, taking himself out of the game on third down, Julio Jones. Nicely done, Dennis.
And that was now, a good one, Dennis.
Faking an injury on the field. Yeah. That was very good.
Yes.
Is that Dennis from our fantasy league?
Yes.
We haven't recapped fantasy.
I beat Robbie.
Yep, there you go.
By 30, exactly.
Dang.
I called shot.
LeGoat crushed me. Yeah. I hope Brennan lost. Did he lose?
Brennan's in first place in the entire league.
Yeah, Brennan is killing it.
Seriously?
He has Kyler Murray, right?
God.
It's week one.
Yeah, it's week one. Let's not overreact.
Let's overreact.
Fred from Ashland City texting back in. My biggest concern is how do you go from getting flat-backed by safeties to Pro Bowler in 1 week? He still may get worked in this Seahawks game. And that is, I think, a legitimate concern. Like I said it earlier in the show, I expect Taylor Luan to be better on Sunday. I think a certain part of this is pride that's going to go into it. But from a physical standpoint, from a recovery standpoint, how much better can he get in 1 week's time? Going from getting embarrassed against Arizona to Seattle, like, is there going to be a significant amount of improvement during 7 days? I don't know. That's a good question.
It is a good question. I will say that I think the high Sunday is like 62 or something in Seattle. So,
jeez.
Now, of course, that's good
sounds
for
great.
The opposition, too. That sounds a little cold to me. I'm not actually looking forward to that. But
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, that's right. You and I are on the same page. Some people love that. I'm like, no, give me that. But as far as football players, like, you're not going to see the cramping, probably the fatigue. Maybe you won't see, you know, the receivers tap out at different times and stuff like that. So is that going to help Taylor Luan block? Not necessarily, but he did cramp as well. So how much were the cramps, which had him in the injury tent for quite a while, a factor in his lack of mobility or getting thrown to the ground by a safety?
Sean texting in, we should have kept Dennis Kelly. A lot of love for Dennis Kelly this week.
Well, I also had someone on Twitter today, like, you know, talking about the safety position, which is a concern now with Amani Hooker on IR, saying, well, the most important thing is to address right tackle. It's like, but how? Like, what are you doing right now going out there and scouring the journeyman wire and all of a sudden you're way better at right tackle? I didn't think Quessenberry was a big problem Sunday. Now, you have to help him, and certainly if you're going to help either tackle going into any game, you're going to help him over Luan. I mean, that's what you pay Luan to do, is to be on an island and handle his area. But like, right tackle is – you're not going to be great at every spot, and they have other guys who can possibly rotate in. Maybe some Brilo can come on. But this really comes down to Luan getting better, Nate Davis getting better, Ben Jones getting better, the whole thing getting better, or else they're in trouble.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ben texting in, I've been over it with Luan. Penalties, then the suspension, then injury, and sprinkle in bad games through it all. Not worth the money. We're better with him than without him, but if I could swap him for a lesser player – with no extra stuff, I would. He can look better when playing against worse defensive ends.
Here and there, he'll get beat. I've never seen him. I've never seen anything close to Sunday
No.
with him as a player. Not close. Here and there. I mean, everybody gets beat in this league. The greatest of the greatest left tackle ever, got beat a bunch of times. Greatest cornerback, Deion Sanders got torched. You know, Charles Woodson got torched. But for the most part, he's been very good. And the thing is, you think about how many teams in this league are always like, obviously everybody's looking for the quarterback. They're always looking for the left tackle too, right? How many teams feel great about their left tackle? Some, but you get into that. You open up cap space if you move on, but now you're in that search for the left tackle after having spent a first and a second on offensive tackle in the past two drafts.
Yeah, how do you feel right now about John Robinson searching for a left tackle based on the way right tackle's gone the last couple of times? I wouldn't feel great about it.
Yeah, maybe he's better at left tackle.
Maybe
again,
so.
Maybe who knows? I mean, when Isaiah Wilson was drafted, there was some talk like, you know, he's such a raw project right now. Yes, he can be a very good right tackle in the NFL quickly, but he could actually be left tackle type guy eventually. Well, so there you go. Lots of good analysis.
Well, call him up.
I mean, yeah. I don't know what he's doing.
I don't either. Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, LaJuan leaves the game only to come back more than any O-lineman in history, and when he leaves, he gets the quarterback killed. How can you be hurt enough to leave the game but healthy enough to come back that many times?
If that's happened in the past, I don't recall it. I'm not saying it hasn't. I don't recall it. But, I mean, cramps are – I mean, that was a day of cramp. That was a prime day
– Week one.
– for players to cramp. In week one, 88 degrees and humid in Nashville, Tennessee. Cramping was as predictable as anything. And, look, if you're cramping up to the point where your leg is seizing up, you can't play. Then you go work it out and you come back out. I think it's a pretty simple explanation.
Well, the second part of that text, though, is kind of what we've been talking about. He leaves the game and the quarterback gets killed. Well, that should probably tell you something about when he's in the game.
Well, except on this
day. I mean, this Sunday was different. The quarterback was getting killed every snap.
Yeah, but again.
The Kendall Lamb snaps were especially entertaining to watch, though.
Well, and the Kendall Lamb snap, somehow, did Todd Downing think that he still had LaJuan out there?
I don't know. Didn't go well.
That's puzzling.
Kathleena texting in, if LaJuan comes out and has a stellar game Sunday, I expect to hear all these people praise him. Why is it dump on LaJuan week? He wasn't the only one who played poorly.
Finally, a contrarian on the LaJuan hate.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, though. It took a while to find a contrarian. Lots of people upset with Taylor LaJuan.
Yeah, it has to be a lot about the outspoken personality.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I would think so. But isn't that kind of what you like, too?
I mean, do you not like him going to a Preds playoff game and pouring beer through a carp's carcass and actually guzzling that carp-soaked Bud Light? Come on.
It's good stuff.
I mean, that's legendary stuff.
It is. Join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and their families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will take place on November the 5th at Nissan Stadium. Register and learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. We'll be back. We'll talk about the Titans and what the game plan should be to corral Russell Wilson as they look ahead to the Seahawks coming up on Sunday. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.